Well, the great and outspoken Danny Trejo is going to join us and tell us all about his incredible life story. Plus, good sports coming up. That's coming in a second. First, LifeLock, cyber criminals. They're not going to let this COVID-19 stop them from committing tax fraud. They want to steal your identity. The tax filing date's been pushed back to July 15th. It's going to be a rise in tax-related identity fraud. Remember, the IRS will not contact you directly by email or text. They will not do it on any other online platform. So if you're getting something, getting an email or a text from the IRS, that's probably the bad guys trying to rip off your identity. LifeLock, leader in identity theft protection. They detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off. I'm your emotional support animal.
It shows just how fucking petrified of the Twitter mob every public figure is nowadays. The fact that they've talked good people who have never harmed anyone into giving preemptive apologies to nutjobs is outrageous.
Written and narrated by Adam Carolla.
Consequently, I'm starting with a warning. I'm not going to apologize for anything in this book.
Available now in all formats. Pick up a copy now at adamcarolla.com.
Danny Trejo is with us. Danny has a new documentary out, Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo. It's available now on digital and on demand. It's such an interesting story, Danny. Such a fascinating guy. And the website, DannyTrejo.com.
iTunes, Google Play, and Amazon. Something like that.
Yeah, you can find it everywhere you do download and stream docs. It's a great documentary. Danny's story is it's inspirational. And I know a lot about your story, but I'm a San Fernando Valley guy. I grew up in San Fernando Valley. I played football at for the Sun Valley Falcons. We played our home field.
Hey! My little cousin Gilbert played for them.
The home field was Poly High over there.
Poly High. I used to be his coach. We played for the Falcons. He was on the Falcons. But he went to prison when he was 17, and he got out when he was 55. So he played for the Falcons.
So his
the wrong road.
His window to play in the NFL had closed by the time he got out of the joint. So, Danny, how do you do it? First off, let's just talk about your story. You grew up in the San Fernando Valley. The San Fernando Valley is a very Hispanic portion of Los Angeles, especially the deep part, like Sun Valley is a little deeper into the valley, Pacoima, a little deeper. How do you grow up?
I had a role model of my uncle who was a
or something?
I'm trying to shut the TV off. I had a Jennifer Lopez. She was a stripper. It's hard to
focus.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, it's like it was. I had my uncle, who was my role model, was a drug addict and an armed robber. So I was kind of, he raised me. So it was inevitable. I wish if he would have been an athlete, I might have played football. You know what I mean? Or if he'd I boxed a lot, you know, but boxing's a tough game.
Where was your dad growing up?
My dad grew up on 38th Street over in East Los Angeles.
And how was your relationship with your dad?
I had no relationship with him. He was a hard working man that was that felt that that's all he had to do. All I got to do is support my family. You know, it wasn't. I think one of the biggest problems that my parents had was my mom was married to her house. My dad was married to his job. And And, you know, they had no time for me. And I think one of the most important things in raising kids is time. You know, I don't care what you do, you got to make time for them. And that's the one thing I did with my kids. I always had time. I just, you know, and I always said, I love you. I love you. Don't say it in front of my friends, Dad. Shut up. I love you.
So you got caught up in the streets. Where physically were you in Pacoima? Where was your home?
I was on Bramford Canyon, right by across, right behind Roger Jessup's dairy, and when it was a dairy.
And it was a tough neighborhood back then, growing up, right?
Yeah. I mean, come on. I think at one time we were murder capital of Los Angeles. There were so many people, you know, getting shot and stuff. It was kind of crazy. Van Nuys Boulevard, San Fernando Road, all that area there was really, really kind of hardcore.
Yeah, it's a tough area to grow up in, and it also, it's funny because it's missing. I've talked about this a lot. Like, you talk about bad parts of Chicago or bad parts of New York. There was still some architecture and some culture and some stuff going on. The San Fernando Valley was a lot of just buildings with flat roofs, stucco, built in the 40s or 50s. I mean, my school looked like a prison. It looked like an institution. All the schools were built in the 30s and 40s.
I was in junior high for about a week, I think.
Which schools did you go to?
Pacoima Junior High School and Sun Valley Junior High School. And then the high schools I went to, Polytechnic, North Hollywood, Van Nuys, San Fernando, Monroe. And then I came back to Poly, and then I went to prison.
Those were all the teams we would play when I was at North Hollywood High. So I went to North Hollywood High.
Adam, I was the first Mexican to go to North Hollywood High. Now it's called North Hollywood.
So what was it like? Did you experience any discrimination as the only Mexican at North Hollywood High back in the day?
Well, I didn't know it was discrimination. I just thought they were checking me because I was from a different school. I fought every day. You know, there was a gang called the Caballeros, and it's a Mexican name. And I was at war with them for a long time.
You were getting kicked out of each school for fighting?
Yeah. Yes, that was it. It's the only thing I ever got kicked out.
It's weird. You know, you take a kid, he fights at Polytechnic High School, Poly Parrots, go Poly. Then he ends up at North Hollywood High, fights again, go Huskies, gets tossed out of Huskies there. Then he goes to Grant, go Lancers.
I didn't go to Grant. Oh. Grant wasn't built
yet. Oh, Grant wasn't built yet.
No, I went to Van Nuys.
Van Nuys, go Wolves. Go Wolves in Van Nuys. Well, it gets caught, fights in Van Nuys, goes to Monroe, go Vikings.
Vikings,
and fights it. But what I'm saying is moving Danny Trejo around is like moving a pedophile priest around. Like, hey, he was trying to bang a kid at that church. We'll move him to another church. Well, what do you think he's going to do there?
All I did was fight. It was so funny. It was like, I guess it was discrimination. I didn't know it. I just, you know, thought that, you know, I'm from a different school, so we fight. And I think the only place I really got comfortable in juvenile hall. There were so many Mexicans in juvenile hall. I thought Mexicans were supposed to go. And so we were just there, and it was kind of a cool place.
I work construction in the San Fernando Valley. So I only work with Mexicans. And they're interesting in their wiring. They're super hard working, but they're not that progressive. They're not like, well, what are we going to do a year from now? They're like, we're going to do more stucco. And they bring their kids. They bring their kids on with them, and they end up doing stucco with them. And they're just like, I'm going to do stucco for 50 years.
My dad's dream was for me to graduate from high school and go into construction with him, labor. You know, it would have been great if he had a construction company and I could be the foreman. You know what I mean? But he was just a hard working, hard, you know, and I just figured there's got to be a way to work smart, you know, where you're not like breaking your back. I remember him having sweat rings at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock and 4 o'clock sweat rings, you know,
and a shirt. Like, yeah. I know it's an interesting subject. So I was in the same position. Like I worked as construction labor in the San Fernando Valley. And I started thinking, I got to figure out a way to get paid without moving cinder blocks or carrying drywall. I got to get paid for an idea, not by the hour. But when did you start having the, yeah.
That's amazing. Cause I knew that this ain't for me. I can work. You know, I mean, if you're building a fence or whatever and you call me, yeah, we can work. I helped put out fires when I was 16 years old in forestry camp. But I said, there's got to be a better way. You know, I just thought armed robbery was easier and doing drugs was easier, you know. But like I said, my role model was with my Uncle Gilbert. He was always dressed sharp. He never sweated, you know, he always smelled good. He had $200 shoes and that was the left one, you know, and Tommy Bahama, you know, tucked in shirts and stuff. And so that's what I want to do. You know, and you can do it if you arm rob. The only problem is your career is short lived.
Well, what were you initially convicted for when you went to San Quentin for 5 years?
Last time, actually, I sold 4 ounces of sugar to a federal agent.
Saying it was cocaine or speed?
Yeah, it was heroin. Oh. And it's funny because I remember him asking me, is it good? I said, it's pure. And it was, you know, but pure sugar. And so they were very angry, you know, and I canceled the money and they beat me all the way to the federal building from North Hollywood and then all the way back, you know, so dumped me in the North Hollywood substation and gave me a silver platter law to the state, you know, so I was convicted of sale and loot of narcotics. And
was it in prison you started having thoughts like, I got to figure out a different life for myself?
You know what? Adam, in 1968, Cinco de Mayo, there was a prison riot and some people really got hurt. And me, Ray Pacheco, and Henry Quijada got sent to the hole. And there was 3 gas chamber offenses. Some sergeant, lieutenant got hit with a rock. Free person got socked and the coast was ruptured. And it was alleged that we did it. And by the grace of God, it was a DJ reject. But while I was in the hole, I promised God if he let me die with dignity, I would say his name every day and I would do whatever I could for my fellow inmate till they kill me. And he said, okay, DJ reject, the DJ reject, the crime. We got sent out and I started living up to my deal, my end of the deal. And I've been doing it every day. Say his name. Do whatever we can for my fellow man. My hat says, what did I forgot? Russ on Wheels. It's this paraplegic guy that sells hats. Everything I do, it's like I do it to help somebody else. We pass out Pampers and clothes and food, you know, because I got restaurants now. So, you know, I go order 8 meals and pass them out.
I've seen you on TMZ handing out Trejo's tacos and other delectable pieces of cuisine from your restaurant. And I have this theory, and I'll ask you what you think of this theory. The person I know, I always picture, there's 2 people I think of in my head. The person I know who does the most for other people and is the most selfless and the one who just sort of is the most generous with their time and their money and everything else, that's Jimmy Kimmel. That's always been Jimmy Kimmel. Even when he wasn't famous, that's who Jimmy Kimmel was and is. And then I have guys I went to high school with who won't do jack shit for anybody any of the time unless you pay them to do it. Jimmy Kimmel has a better life, a better family, and is certainly 1,000 times richer than any of my friends from the Valley who will never do anything for anybody unless you pay them. So how is it that the guy who's given away so much has so much more than the person that doesn't give away anything?
Well, I think that that's that thing they call Carmen. You know, it's like what?
Hold on. Carmen is your aunt. Karma is the...
Oh, Karma.
Karma is what you're talking about.
Girlfriend.
Yeah.
It's like the more you give, the more you get. And I honestly believe that that's the way the good Lord wants us to live. We're supposed to help each other. I wish I was as rich as Jimmy Kimmel, but I got enough to buy 150 boxes of Pampers with everybody. Every time we give women food, do you have any Pampers? If they got kids, do we have any Pampers? So we started handing out Pampers, and it's funny. Mario Castillo, my assistant, said, "Wow, we went from shot callers in San Quentin to passing out Pampers." And then he said, "If we go to prison, they'll give us a nickname like, hey, Huggies, come here."
How do you become a shot caller in prison?
Reputation of not taking any steps backwards, reputation of putting in work, reputation of a couple of bodies, and that's, you know, that's it. That's the way it's done. It's, you know, if you're on a pile of shit, who wants to be in the middle?
Right. So you had to establish yourself. If you went to a prison, you had to establish yourself as someone that nobody could fuck with. You didn't step back. You had to get that.
There's only two kinds of people in prison. There's predators and prey, and you have to decide every morning what you're going to be. Only problem is you can decide you're a predator and somebody else can decide, no, you're prey, you know, and then that's when a life-threatening situation shows up.
How different is prison now than when you were in it? Or is it?
Well, first of all, it's like so many more people. California has more people in prison than anywhere in the world. You know, I mean, we are a prison state. We have to have some kind of prison reform. And honest to God, 10% of the people in prison belong in prison. The other 90 can be mental illness, autism, bipolar, can be addiction, can be housed somewhere else or done work with somewhere else. And imagine being in a place where 10% are psychopaths, the other 90% are angry because they don't want to be there.
Yeah. Sounds like my workplace, actually.
That's funny.
It's weird. It's so funny. When I was a kid, I would watch movies, and the movies would be about prison. Like, I remember watching the movie Pepillon a million years ago with Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman. Great. They both were great in that. But by the way, I felt so bad for the prisoners. And it's kind of weird because I didn't feel as bad for the victims of the crime as I did for the prisoners. And sometimes I'll have a bad dream, and my bad dream is that I've done something horrible or by mistake or whatever, and I'm going to prison. Like, I've always had a kind of weird relationship with prison, and I still do. Like, I picture being locked up into that very small cage, and even being claustrophobic. Like, you're in that cage, whether there's a fire in that place. But
I remember being in the L.A. County Jail, and there was an earthquake, and there was this unbelievable, you know, the bars all rattling, the old county jail, and then after it slowed down, we started, officer, we were all locked up. There was no, the police all ran out.
They all ran out.
We were out of the Yeah. So I mean, they don't blame them. You know?
So,
and after that, they condemned the LA County jail.
When, so for you, it's sort of eat or be eaten, I guess, in prison. And that's a horrible mentality to have once you're out of prison. How long, once you were out of prison, were you able to turn that off, or did it linger for a while?
I think I got clean in 1968. That was when I got clean, when I asked God to let me die with dignity, and I started saying his name every day, and I started doing whatever I could for my fellow inmate to help him and whatever. And I came out, and I remember standing in front of my mom's house on Brantford, and I was, you know, how do I be a nice guy? Everybody in this neighborhood hates me. I robbed everybody. I burglarized everybody's house and stole stuff out of everybody's garage. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this one lady pull her trash cans out. In 1969, they didn't have the rolling kind of trash cans. They used to put everything in a big tub. And I seen her, and I remember walking up to her to help her with her trash. I'll never forget what she said. She said, "No me robas, Danny." I said, "Shut up, vieja." And I grabbed her trash can. I pulled it out. And then I went to her backyard to get the other trash can. And she never took her eyes off me because she knew I was going to run for the garage and steal her lawnmower or steal something. And I got the other trash can. I pulled it out and just stood there staring at me. That's what I did. I started taking out the trash in my mom's neighborhood. And the first gift I ever got was a fake suede blazer, double-breasted. And I remember asking my mom, "Where'd that come from?" She says, "That viejo with the real bad arthritis brought it." And that was our first present I can remember getting. And that was it. And my sponsor, Sam, used to say, "You have to do good things for other people." He always had that telling him, "You have to do good things for other people and not expect any kind of reward." And that's what I've been doing.
How old were you?
Life just
at that time.
26 when I came out of prison.
26?
26, yeah.
Chris, there is a picture of me somewhere wearing a Sun Valley Falcons uniform, talking to a coach on a sideline, and it's a blue helmet. It says Falcons on the side. And I was talking to old Coach Burr and Coach Podley, and that was at Polytechnic High School in the San Fernando Valley. So one of your first movie roles was a Runaway Train. Is that correct?
Eric Roberts. Yeah.
I love Runaway Train. It's a sleeper movie. Most people haven't seen it. Maybe they haven't even heard of it, but it's John Voight and Eric Roberts. They're both magnificent in it, and it's a beautiful, beautiful movie, and the cinematography is beautiful. You played a fighter, prison boxer in that?
Yes, and that's how I got the job. I ran into Eddie Bunker, who was a writer who knew me from San Quentin. And when I walked on, he goes, "Danny, I saw you win the lightweight and the welterweight title up in Quinton." I said, "Yeah, Eddie Bunker." We started talking, and he said, "Hey, we need somebody to train one of the actors how to box." And I said, "What's it pay?" And he says, $320 a day. And I said, "How bad do you want this guy beat up?" I thought he wanted me to beat somebody up. And I'd have done it for another $50. He goes, "No, you got to be careful. This actor's real high strung. He might sock you." I said, "Eddie, for $320, give him a stick. You know, are you crazy? I've been beat up for free." And I started training Eric Roberts how to box for the movie Runaway Train. And the director saw me, and he saw that I could deal with Eric, you know, and Roberts, they hired me to be the boxer. And I'll never forget, Eric chose me. Yeah, I want him to fight. So Andre says, "You be in movie, you fight in my movie, and you be my friend." And the Russian aristocrat. But But if you got a prison background, you don't like hearing people say, "You be my friend," mm-hmm. you know, and you want to say, "Well, what does that entail?" You know, and then he leans over and he kisses me on each cheek and walks away. I said, "Eddie, listen, I'll train the kid for $320, but if I got to kiss that old man, I want more money." And he goes, "No, he's European. I didn't know they kiss," you know. And so me and Andre became great, great friends. He's the one that got me that SAG card. And I didn't know what a SAG card was. I was just doing this whole thing for $50. And really, I would have done that part for $50, but I found out they paid you a lot more, you know. So
Was that the early 80s, mid early 80s? Yeah, what?
That was 1985. That was SAG minimum.
We'll pull that picture up for you. I think Max Pat has found that picture. There's me.
All right.
That's Polly High. That's me.
Love the pants.
13 years old. Falcons on the side of the helmet. Sun Valley Falcons. Yeah. Talking to Coach Burr and Coach Podley, because I was the captain of the defensive team.
That was Gilbert. He was Sun Valley Falcons. My God.
How's Gilbert doing today? He was in prison for 38 years.
He did 58 years.
Thirty-eight.
38 years, and he's 50. Now he's like 56, 57. I think he's like 57.
He was in prison since 17.
Yeah, he was 17 years old when he went to prison.
And he got out when?
55, when he turned 55. Got out 3 years ago. So he's going to be 58.
And how's he doing?
Right now, he's actually an electrician, and he's working on the new Rams stadium. Go Rams! And he's he's doing great. I mean, he's just doing so good, man.
Did he learn that trade in prison?
Yes, he learned it. He learned mathematics by himself. He learned how to program a computer without a computer. He just read. That's why I tell young, read everything. I remember when I took my son. He was 9, and my other son was 13, and I took him to 9, 10, 11, 12. Took him to a comic book store, and my son bought these two comics, and the guy, I'll never get this, he says, "You let him read this?" I said, "Hey, I am so glad he's reading. Do you understand? When I was his age, I was erasing the clothes off Jughead and Veronica and making them naked. So in juvenile hall. So I'm real glad he read everything. Right now he just finished directing me in a film called From a Son. So read everything. Read the books your parents won't let you read. Read anything.
Here's a question for Danny Trejo. I'll tease it because I got to do a spot, but you have a great sense of humor, and that sense of humor is something that's usually kind of always with you. I mean, it's probably something that was always present. Now, you may have repressed it or tamped it down when you were fighting or threatening somebody or stealing something or robbing a bank, but you must have always had a sense of humor. There must have been a base there of a sort of a comedian trapped inside a kind of gangbanger's body. Is that I'll tease that. I'll let you think about it for a second. Let me hit McGuire's here real quick. Car waxes have come a long way. Last year, McGuire's introduced hybrid ceramic spray wax. It's advanced SiO2 hybrid technology, delivers ceramic wax protection and durability. No rubbing, curing, or buffing. Provides extreme water bead action, the beating action of the water. That's what you're looking for when you're waxing up your ride. This year, McGuire's launched their liquid version, seals the paint for long-lasting protection against the elements. Easy to use, apply like traditional liquid wax. Also, hybrid ceramic spray detailer removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, bird droppings, boosts gloss and enhances the protection as well. If you like automobiles and you want to wax it up and you want it to look beautiful, by the way, the spray detailer, the quick detailer, is awesome. It is Meguiar Ceramic, made easy with Meguiar's. Yeah, sense of humor. You have it or you don't. You have it, but you certainly didn't lead that kind of life at a young age. But thoughts?
Meguiar's, first of all, great wax. I use it on my cars. I got old cars, and their paint is really, really
well, dusty. Thanks. We'll talk about them in a second. Sense of humor.
But
Chris,
I will
fix the screen, please. Sorry. Go ahead.
You need, in prison, you have to have a sense of humor to survive. It might be a very sick sense of humor. I can remember seeing this guy stabbed in the back, and he was walking around the yard screaming, trying to get this knife. And this 3,000 people were laughing. It was comical, you know, it was like a cartoon. But you have to keep that or you'll go insane. I used to act out the Wizard of Oz in my cell in isolation. Give me those shoes, Dorothy. And then the whole thing, you know, I'll drop a house on you, Scarecrow. And I used to do this whole thing. And that, and then I used to do the Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know, the one with Charles, she gave me water, the one with Charles Lawton, you know, and guards would think you're going crazy, but you had to do that. So they wouldn't make you go crazy.
Would you do it? Would you do it for other prisoners, like so they could hear you?
For me, you have to keep this sense of humor here. You know, you can't walk around prison smiling because people think you like being there. So you've got to have this killer face. And I remember Sam Hardy. I told you that hillbilly with the jaw. He says, I remember he said, I said, Sam, what'd you go to prison for? He said, well, got in a little argument. And I killed two gentlemen. I murdered one and killed the other. And because the bottom line to an argument is a murder. So I would keep this sense of humor no matter what. It would be in here. I would laugh, you know, and I would make something funny, whatever it was, I'd make something funny, and you had to. And we would have some belly laughs and stuff, but in an instant, that can change. In an instant, you have to have that switch to that. If you're laughing and somebody's staring at you, it goes from, ha, 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 what the hell are you looking at? You know, it's a split second. So you have to have that. And now I got dogs behind me.
Yeah, I got a dog up on the sofa. Did you, when you were in the hole or in solitary, what was the schedule like when you were just confined that way? How did that work?
The schedule, the only way you knew what time it was when they fed you. You know, they gave you a juke ball and that's just compressed food. That was, you know, you just didn't even care. It didn't matter. You know, you had no schedule. You just did as many push-ups as you could. You tried to do a sit-up or whatever and just fantasize. And that's a good thing about, you have three mindsets as a convict. You have intimidate, manipulate, or fantasize. That's it, you know. That's all.
The last one probably ended with an 8-2, I'm guessing. but you, so how long did you spend in that cell? I mean, it would be 24 hours a day, but for how long?
I went from Cinco de Mayo 1968 to August 27th, I think, because I remember August 26th, the Beatles song came out. Hey Jude,
right.
Don't be afraid. And sometimes the guard will have the radio on, and it was on. We heard it, and it got completely quiet in the hole. And when it gets quiet in the hole, you know something's about to jump off. And we're listening, and everybody listened very calmly until he went, Judy, 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 yeah! Everything blew up. Sinks got broken. Fires got lit. It was like I had a bad habit of lighting my cell on fire, forgetting that I was locked in it. You know what I mean? And so not until they shot the hose in there to shut it off.
How would you light a fire? You know, where did you get matches or a lighter in prison? And what couldn't you get in prison?
And where did you get heroin?
Yeah, you were doing heroin in prison?
That was where I kicked my last habit, really, was in Soledad State Prison. I stayed in the hole. I kicked my last habit right there. That was when I kind of said, hey, God, let me die with dignity and I'll say your name every day. You know, because out of all my life, teachers were always writing potential, enormous amount of potential, potential if he could stay still, potential if he could be all this potential, parole officer, Danny has a lot of, and when you're expecting to go to the gas chamber, you wonder where the hell was all that potential go, you know, because they're going to kill me. And you almost get mad at yourself for what did I do, you know, and you're 24 years old and your life's over.
Did you have a thought? I did myself. By the time I had a thought that I basically wasted the first 30 years of my life. I didn't do anything I wanted to do. I worked construction. All I was a donkey, basically, for 30 years. And so once I got into show business, I met some people. I've had this making up for lost time kind of mentality. And did you have that mentality once you started to go in the right direction?
You know, I came out of prison August 23rd, 1969, and I immediately started trying to help people and do that. And I started a gardening business. I worked. And when I got into drug counseling, I found something that I absolutely loved doing. And I just ran all over. I just ran all over doing it. And then Jimmy Pena is funny because he hired me. I was in the San Fernando Valley. The Narcotics Prevention Project was in East L.A. in Boyle Heights. And he hired me. I thought he hired me to be a counselor. But really, there was about five guys dealing dope out of Narcotics Prevention Project. So he hired me as muscle. And he said, Danny, we got to clean up the street. So anyway, we got rid of all the guys dealing drugs. I said, well, I hope you're not going to fire me now. So they made me transportation because I was the only one that had insurance in my car. And I would transport drug addicts back and forth to the hospital. And that's, I work for Western Pacific Med Corp still. You know, I still work for them and we detox drug addicts. And I love doing that. So I haven't changed. I'm still doing the same stuff I did when I got out of prison, and that works. But you know, I am a helper.
You have a motor. I mean, the people said, you know, your counselors and your parole officers and teachers, they all said you had potential because you have a motor. You have, I don't know if you have, you know, hyper activity or whatever, you've been diagnosed with anything, but it seems like you have this motor.
When I was in Pacoima Junior High School, they started a class for me, Malcolm Armendariz, Eddie Valenzuela, Paul Belmont. They started a class for us they called social adjustment. And they had us all in one class. We were like the bad kids. You know, we were the bad kids of that school. And we stayed in this one class. Everybody else got to move, but we stayed in this one. And I finally, when I started working with autistic children, now I realized everybody in that classroom was on the spectrum somewhere. But nobody knew what autism was in the 50s or, you know, nobody knew it. They were just bad. We were just bad kids. But the same things I see autistic children doing now, we were doing in that classroom.
Have you ever been diagnosed?
was it hyperkinetic?
Yeah, they used to call, so they used to call HD, you know, whatever, HD, whatever they call it now. What is it, Chris?
ADHD.
ADHD. They used to call ADHD hyperkinetic or hyperactivity. Yeah. Like they, it's like they used to call, climate change, ecology. They used to call, you know, green stuff, we called it ecology. Like they just had different names for the same shit back then. Now, used to be Chicano, now you're Latinx or something like that.
Yeah. You know, Mexican American. I don't care. It doesn't matter, man. I know who I am and I love being who I am. And it's funny because it's like one of the advice I give kids is you want to try to be yourself. Because everybody else is taken. You know what I mean? Just try to be yourself. And but some of them will say, well, who am I? And it's like, you know, because a lot of our kids, especially lower income, especially feel like they've been thrown away. You know, mom's got a job, dad's got a job, they're too busy, so they're kind of left to their own devices. And I try to just tell, hey, it doesn't matter where you end, it's where you, it doesn't matter where you start, it's where you end, you know. And we've had a lot of success. I've had a lot of young people come up and say thank you for, I heard you in juvenile hall, you know, I heard you when you were in juvenile hall and I'm doing pretty good. That's awesome. That's the greatest feeling in the world.
Did you ever reconcile with your dad, if that's the right word?
Yes, before my dad passed away. God, he passed away 36 years ago. Me and him became really close, really close. I think the last 2 years of his life, we became really just like unbelievably close. It was awesome. It was the best feeling. And because we hadn't really gotten close at all. And I thought my dad hated me, but the reality was his defense was anger. You know, he was just always mad at me. And I understand why. You know, he made his mom a promise when he got in trouble that if she helped him get a lawyer and stuff, he would never get in trouble again. And you know, he kept his promise. I promised that 8 times, you know.
How did things end up with your mom?
Same way, you know, like 2 years, I think before she passed away, we became really close. My dad passed away a long time before my mom, and we were like estranged for like 4 years after he died. And then I remember Johnny Harris, my sponsor, said, you know, why are you dicking around? Why don't you just call her, you know? And so I just called her. Hey, what's up? I came real close. And she was real lonely because after my dad died, and so I was always leaving town. So I would get my friends, you know, hey, I'd go introduce them. They'd come over and stay with her and have lunch with her and take her to the store. And it's funny, every time my mom would laugh because anytime one of my friends pulled up in front of her house, her neighbors, Alice, there's some bad looking guys in front of your house. Danny's friends, they're all right. They're taking me to the store. They're, you know, they take her to the doctor wherever she had to go.
Was she staying in the San Fernando Valley?
Yeah, it's the same house on Bramford.
Yeah,
I gave that house to my daughter, and it's funny. My documentary. It's called
Inmate Number One.
Yeah, it just came out, and it shows that house. And my daughter texts me. She's in Ohio, and she rented that house out. She says, "Dad, I gotta paint my house now because it's famous." You know, so.
Was it Gilbert? Was that your cousin who's working on the Ram Stadium now?
Yeah. Gilbert, my role model son is working. I finally got him out of prison. He's working on the Ram Stadium right now.
What did he do to get himself in prison for 36 years?
Second degree murder. And then he committed a crime, stabbed a guard while he was in prison. The guard attacked him, so he stabbed him. So anyway, and that gave him a life sentence. So basically he could never come. Then we passed the law. We went, Governor Jerry Brown, Senator Ball, Senator Bill, and some other guys that really, really helped. Tracy Lumner, his attorney. And right now his name, Gilbert Trejo, is in the law book. They set a precedent that a juvenile that committed a crime before he was 21 in prison can't come up for parole. So they didn't want to let him out. They were angry. The Department of Corrections, didn't even let us on the campus. They actually dropped him off on the highway, and that's where we picked him up.
How many guys in prison, including yourself, had time added on to their sentence for some of the things they may have done in prison?
God, a lot of them. A lot of them. It's like you do something, you know, you get caught with something, and it's just more time. And it can be more time without them adding more time. You just get shot down at the parole board. Parole board comes up, nope, denied.
You know, right. So Gilbert is also the name of your son, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was named after my uncle.
So
he just directed me in a film.
I want to talk about that in a second, but your uncle goes in there for how long and then ends up getting how much tacked on?
Oh, he went. Gilbert did like 25 years in prison, you know, on and off, on and off, on and off. And then he overdosed and died out here. He was collecting money for a drug dealer.
Wait a minute. Now I'm confused. One guy's working on the Rams stadium, right?
That's his son.
Oh, that's his son.
That's his son, yeah.
Oh, okay. How about you? Do you have brothers and sisters?
No. Well, yeah, I do. I actually met my mom and my sister when I was in the county jail. They read about me in the paper, and they came up to visit me because I was raised by my stepmom and my dad.
Oh.
And it was funny. They came up to visit me in the county jail. It was amazing seeing my mom for the first time. And I was in the county, and she kind of said, "We read about you in the paper. That's how we found you." So,
you met your biological mom for the first time when you were in prison.
County jail, yeah.
Oh, county
jail,
and your sister as well.
Diane, yeah.
So what happened to your biological mom?
She passed away. There, you know, just a long time ago, she passed away. My dad took me from my biological mom when I was 3.
Hmm.
And I think he threatened to kill her if she tried to pick me up, you know, something, get me or something.
That may have had a psychological effect on a young Danny Trejo, right?
I don't know. Yeah, probably.
Well, I mean, taking a 3-year-old away from their biological mom sounds pretty traumatic to me.
Yeah. Then it's funny. He marries up my mom, my stepmom, to take care of me, and she doesn't like kids.
Jesus
Dad, Christ. Screwed up here, Dad.
I have to talk about Con Air because it's one of my favorite fun movies. If I turn on the TV and Con Air's on, I will never turn it off. I will never change that channel.
Adam, let me tell you something about Con Air. Con Air was like the epitome of tough guys. They picked all the wannabe tough guys and put them on one movie, right?
Right.
And if you spit, somebody would spit farther, and then you got a spitting contest, right? Somebody did a push-up, you had a push, and there was a guy, Benny Ukitis, who was
Benny the Jet.
Benny the Jet, right, exactly. 5-time world kickboxing champion. And he was actually, oh, God, what's his name?
So Benny Ukitis had a gym called the Jet Center. In Van Nuys, and I used to go there. So he was a famous kickboxer.
Okay, but wait. Now, who was the other star of that movie? There was Nicolas Cage. There was
John Malkovich and John Cusack.
John Cusack. The people don't realize this. John Cusack is double bad. People don't know this. He can kick the bumper off a Cadillac. It's funny. He is Benny Yukitis is his sensei, mm-hmm. and I have watched Johnny hit that bad. I watched him fight. Amazing, right?
Right.
And Yukitis, they had a dojo set up, and John Cusack would work out and stuff. And every lunch, every break, Benny Yukitis would come pick me up. And say, come on, let's go. And we'd walk to his dojo, and we just sit and talk and eat our lunch there. And I go, Benny, what's your trip? You're always pulling me away. He said, Danny, look, I know you grew up with my brother Mondo. These guys are all having whose is bigger contest. And I know you're not a good sport and you don't play well with others. You're exactly like my older brother. So we'll just stay over here because I don't like that Hollywood who's tougher contest. You know, I can't stand that shit. And so we would sit there and watch these guys spit and do push-ups. And one time we're all sitting around and I'm over by myself with Benny, just kind of bullshitting. And Nicolas Cage says, hey, I don't care what you guys say. Only guy I'd be scared of meeting in an alley is Trejo. And I go, well, why me? because it's like, you know, I just don't play that stuff. I don't get into contests. You know, I don't like competition.
Well, I have thoughts. One is Benny Urquidez had his brother-in-law was named Blinky.
Absolutely.
You work
with Blinky a lot.
I know if there's a guy in the San Fernando Valley who's Mexican, his name is Blinky. You must know that dude. I think he died a few years back. He's alive. His wife, Lily.
His wife died. Yeah.
Died.
Yeah. And his sons died. And we're trying to get his son out of prison right now. But he was, you know, he is double bad. He works with an agency called, what is it? Neighborhood and schools, schools and neighborhoods. Yeah. And he does a great, great job. Usually if there's a gang murder, his agency immediately helps the police immediately.
So
talks to the family.
So Benny Urquidez is this world champion kickboxer, and there's stories of him going to like Thailand and doing death matches and crazy, crazy shit, right?
Yeah. He is amazing. If you want to ever shut one of them karate guys in the movies up, any one of them, talk about Chuck Norris or Benny Yukitis. They just immediately just like, shut up. Because right. They know those Chuck Norris is the real thing. Everybody else is Hollywood. All of them.
So he had a gym. It's called the Jet Center. And Blinky taught there. And Lily, Blinky's wife, taught there as well. And she was a super tough chick. And I mean, hard on the students. And Blinky was the brother-in-law. And Cusack, if you look at the movie, Say the Right Thing, or Say Anything, he was saying that kickboxing was the sport of the future in that movie. So he obviously was doing it in his real life, and it was bleeding into the movies. We're looking at a picture of Cusack and Benny, and who is that?
Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan next up. Yeah. So
he consulted on all Jackie Chan's movies.
Oh, he did.
And he worked with Jackie Chan.
There you go. So, you know, on the movie set, I can tell you, I was a stand-in on a movie called with Emilio Estevez and Cuba Gooding Jr. called Judgment Night. It's a bad 90s movie about Jeremy Piven and a Winnebago, and they got on the wrong side of Chicago. And I can tell you that on the set, the bad guys acted like bad guys. Like they were acting out their part. You know, they didn't sit with the good guys at lunch. I can see where it would be a little bit volatile if you got a whole bunch of the baddest dudes around, put them in one movie, put them in costume, hair and makeup and everything, and told them they're playing a badass. I could see where there could be some scrapping off camera going on. So Benny was, yeah.
Me and Emilio, he was on the, God, I just can't give his name. Anyway, he was on Sons of Anarchy, Emilio, Rivera. I'm sorry. Yeah. We kind of like step aside and we're looking at tough guys and because people don't understand there's no such thing as tough. Do you understand? 6 inches of steel will take care of anybody. And right. So it's like we've been seeing the other side of who's tough. You understand? In prison, you never have a fist fight because you can get caught having a fist fight. If I sock you, you sock me back, we roll on the ground, they shoot us. If I come up behind you and stab you 3 times and walk away, I won.
Right. So fist fights in prison, just shankings.
God, come on. It's like, because you can get caught and the price is the same. Do you understand, Adam? For drawing blood on an inmate, it's the same as stabbing them. You drew blood.
Is what would they make the shanks out of? Toothbrushes, metal shop?
Anything. Well, if one of your guys worked in the metal shop or wood shop or whatever, then you had shanks. You know what I mean? So shanks out of a spring from your bed. Anything that you can sharp to a point.
Jesus. What percentage of guys had a shank?
Anybody that wants to stay alive, you know, always have some place to go to get a shank, you know.
What would you do with, I mean, obviously there's so many people in prison that don't need to be in prison, but what else kind of reform? Like you're talking about Gilbert, who learned to be an electrician inside the prison. He's now working on the Rams stadium out here. So he spent his part of his time learning a trade. That's a good thing, I guess.
I think he spent 16 years in the hole. And I think he said he read every book there was printed. And he started reading electrical books, mathematics. He got all the way up to total psychogeometry, and he learned math, and electric is a lot of math. So he passes all the tests and everything. And he's in the electrician union right now. And he's just so, I'm so proud of him. You know, he is a perfect example that, of what you can do, you know, but prison reform, really, it has to start in our court system, because our court system is adversarial. Now, district attorneys don't get advanced if they let people go. Okay, if a police officer brings somebody in, the district attorney doesn't say, oh no, this guy's innocent.
Right.
Understand? They're gonna go to court. So now, since they passed the 3-strike law, you took all the power away from the judge. The district attorney has the power. The district attorney says, look, this crime carries 5 years. Now, I will give you 90 days if you plead guilty. We're not talking about innocence or guilt. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So now, you got to get back to work. Your family's starving. What are you going to do? You can say, okay, can you suspend that sentence?
Right.
And the district says, certainly. So you can get back to work. Your Honor, I'm guilty. suspended sentence. Okay. Bam. That's one strike against you. So basically, any crime you go before the judge, you're going to plead guilty. Or you need an attorney, $10,000. I'll give you a perfect example. My assistant, Mario Castillo, he got busted for an armed robbery kidnap. Okay? Armed robbery kidnap. Very serious crimes. Got busted right here in San Fernando, Sylmar. And it wasn't that. It was a fender bender, and the guy offered him $500. And he goes, that won't even cover my I forget what you call it in your insurance, you know, deductible.
Right.
And so Mario called the police. This guy doesn't want to give me his ID, blah, 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 blah. The police came. They immediately saw Mario. Mario, if you look at Cholo Gangster in the dictionary, it's got his picture, okay? He looks like Cholo Gangster.
Same with my assistant, Matt Fondelier. Sorry, go ahead.
Don't get on the ground. Yeah. Huh, wait, I called him. Attempted armed robbery and kidnap.
Wow.
And cost me $35,000 to fight this case. Last court appearance, we go. District attorney comes to me and says, I think the judge is going to dismiss this. Now, do you have another $35,000 because we're going to refile it?
Wow.
I said, what are you talking? He said, he can plead guilty to obstruction of justice. Now, we went from armed robbery, kidnap, to obstruction of justice. I looked at Mario. He said, why didn't you tell us at first?
Right.
It's beside the point. So he pleads guilty. District attorney gets a good strike. Oh, okay. I did my job.
He gets a win.
Absolutely.
He gets a W, not a L.
That's where it starts. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
Do you understand that? That's where it starts.
Oh, listen, I do a podcast with Mark Garagos, the attorney, and I've talked to him about this stuff a million times, and he knows exactly what you're saying. And
we've got all these kids in prison that had to plead guilty, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sad. It's really sad.
Well,
I did a podcast, or I did a, what do you call it? I don't know what you call it, but I did it, and it was a surviving guide to prison. And I did it with, I forget his name. It's a family, and his sister's very, very famous, and he's famous. And, oh, my God, I forget his name.
The Osmonds.
Anyway. No, not the Osmonds.
He's famous, and his sister's very, very famous.
My burglar alarm. Hey, stop it.
Somebody, so the guy's famous.
Anyway, so we did this, and I said the same thing. I got a letter from the district attorney telling me to retract that. I said, hell no.
Right.
Because it's true.
What was... last question, Danny, in the movie, by the way, Inmate Number One's a great documentary, The Rise of Danny Trejo, and it's available now on all digital platforms and on demand as well. What was...
iTunes, Google Play, and Amazon.
And there. And did you... ethnically, what was the prison like when you were there? What was it comprised of? Did the groups have to stay with their own group? How did that work?
Yeah. If most of the people in prison are Latin, Latino, and African American. That's the population, okay? Who did it? Who did I do it with?
The director?
Yeah, the producers, whatever.
Matthew Cook.
Who?
Matthew Cook?
No.
Williams? But a famous sister. Well, Eric Roberts is a famous
sister. Patricia Arquette was in it.
Patricia Arquette? David Arquette.
Let me see it. David Arquette. God, man. I'm going to hire him better.
That's right.
You're my assistant. Yeah. David Arquette. Me, we did this. It was acclaimed. It was unbelievable. He did a great job. Man, he did a really great job.
So the prison was black and Hispanic. Did all the blacks and Hispanics have to stay with their own group?
Yes, absolutely. And usually the whites will end up with the Mexicans, will come more of the Mexicans because the whites and blacks hate each other, you know.
So the whites in prison. Right. So the whites were the minority, but they would have to take up with the Mexicans to sort of pick a group.
Yeah, most of the time. Now since the AB, the Aryan Brotherhood's come out, it's like they're pretty strong. They've gotten pretty strong. It's a lot more. Well, the reason, again, there's a lot more poor white guys going to the prison.
Was there violence in the groups, black on black, Hispanic on Hispanic, or was the violence always Hispanic and the black?
If a Hispanic did something wrong, you know, he got tagged. He got tagged, whether it was, you know, Mexican on Mexican or black on black, you know, they get tagged. You do something wrong. You know, the biggest problem is that envy, jealousy, you know, those are rapid. Those are rampant, you know what I mean? And the Mexican mafia kind of held things down for a long time as far as you got to get permission to kill somebody, you know, that kind of stuff.
Wow. The doc is amazing. The story is unbelievable. And anybody who is listening to this thinking, how do I get from where I am now to where I'd like to be? Watch this inspirational tale. And
I think, Adam, if you want to like really learn what happens, get Edward James Olmos on your show and ask him about American Me. That movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he'll do it. I don't think he'll come on because he really got in trouble. You know, it's like really.
He did?
Dumb. Yeah.
What happened to him?
Well, basically, he lied, said he had permission to do this movie from Joe Morgan, the leader of the Mexican mob at the time, and he didn't. And so a lot of the people, I think 8 of the people on that movie that were told not to do it got killed, you know,
really.
And they were after him for a while. So he kind of got out of Dodge
I did not know that story. So, he played famously, I think, Jaime Escalante, the math teacher.
I think the problem was that me and Eddie Bunker tried to warn him. Wait a minute, dude. You know, theatrically, you're not working with theatrical people, Eddie. Cut it loose. You know? So we did Blood In, Blood Out, a movie called Bound by Honor, but we did Blood In, Blood Out. And that was okay. That was a movie. That didn't say Mexican Mafia. That didn't say this guy and that guy. And, you know, he got some of his facts wrong, and they were pretty angry about it.
Wow. I was wondering where Edward James Olmos was, but that's where he's in exile, I guess, because he crossed the Mexican Mafia.
I think he started doing I think what he's done since the Mayans. I think he's got a part on the Mayans.
Well, we'll look into it.
Supposedly there have been attempts to extort money from Olmos. The Mexican Mafia supposedly very enraged by the film, and 3 consultants on this film were later murdered because of the false depiction of a homosexual rape scene, which offended the Mexican Mafia gangsters machismo.
Machismo, yeah.
I'll never forget when we told him, hey, you can't do that. Man, he goes, well, theatrically, it looks real good because he comes back and he kills the guy. I said, you're not working with theatrical people here. You know, that's a lie. And so, but I think, you know, sometimes movie stars are like idiots.
Well, that's a crazy story, and we'll get into it a little more because I'm curious about it. Not today, but it's interesting. You know, when I did The Family Guy, Chris, and I played Death in the episode called Death Lives, I went through my wallet looking for a picture, and I pulled out a picture of Edward James Olmos. Just to bring it full circle in that cartoon from 20 years ago. And I had no idea why I was carrying a picture of him. But there's a scene with me in my wallet, and I'm showing a sailor a picture of the woman I'm in love with, and I pulled out two pictures of Edward James Olmos. I don't know if you can even, I don't know how the internet works, if you can find that or not, but it's weird. I've never met him, I don't think. All right, I'll buy it. Can't find it. Fine. We'll find it for another show. Danny Trejo, Inmate Number One, great movie, inspirational. The Rise of Danny Trejo. You can get it on all the platforms, digital, on demand, and Xbox, and everywhere else. Danny, always great to speak to you, my friend.
Thank you. You know what? I always love being on your show. I think you're just a classy dude. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Danny. We appreciate you coming on. Last but not least, Geico. Right now, Geico is offering 15% off on motorcycle, RV policies, and, of course, car insurance as well. Get that on top of the money you're already saving at Geico. So what are you waiting for? Take care of business at Geico. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save and get an extra 15% off when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. That is geico.com. All right, here we go. We'll play the scene from The Family Guy. Hang in and watch it, Danny. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, nice ass.
Oh, sorry, no. That's Edward James Olmos' ass.
All right, you got to go back. Oh,
it's just the only thing on there.
All right, well, there it is. Crazy. Thank you, Danny. Tell next time's Adam, and you can get my book. Go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows. Good sports coming up next. Till next time, Adam Carolla for Gina and Baldwin. Danny Trejo saying mahalo. Thanks, Danny.
Stick around. Adam Carolla and Dave Damaschek return with good sports right after this.
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Good Sports. Dave Damaschek here. Adam Carolla over there yesterday chopping up the news of Cam Newton to the New England Patriots. What it means. You know what, Ace? Let's pick up there and then we'll move on to a couple other items I wanted to kibitz with you about. But do you think that Cam Newton on the New England Patriots, when everybody for the last few months or so have simultaneously thrown dirt on the Patriots and elevated the Buffalo Bills. Do you think that if you have to bet right now, bet online, we'll hear about them in just a second. Go on bet online. Who are you picking in the AFC East right now?
Well, let's really break down the Patriots. You know, we're talking about, well, what's going to happen now that Brady's gone? How many Hall of Famer, potential Hall of Famer, and Hall of Famers, and Pro Bowlers have left the Patriots in the last two decades?
Many.
Many. Many.
Yes.
That's all they do. All they do is turn over personnel.
Or the sidebar to that is guys get thrown money by the other 31 teams. Like, oh, he'll replicate what he did in New England. It's like, no. There's some weird voodoo that goes on up in Foxborough that does not translate down to Tennessee or Texas or wherever else you're talking about.
Right. So we're not talking about, well, what are the Dolphins going to do without Dan Marino? Because they've changed so much personnel on the offensive and defensive side of the ball over the last 20 years that if there's any team that is poised to turn over one guy, now he's the quarterback, obviously, that's a super important job. But if anyone has proven that they can swap one guy out for another guy, it's the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Far and above any other organization.
Yeah, and proof of that for any of the cynics out there, they're ignoring. I know it was a limited sample size, but Jimmy G won every game he ever played. Jacoby Brissett was good as well when he had to take over for Brady. Yeah, it's and you know, for what it's worth, Drew Bledsoe came in way back when at the start of the millennium and beat the Steelers in Heinz Field when Brady got hurt. So there's plenty of track record that you're going to be able to plug a QB in there and succeed. It is interesting though that given the way Brady plays versus the way the same position and everything else, but wildly different way. But people say, well, how's Cam going to fit into that New England system? Have you watched the Patriots play? They don't do the same thing week in, week out. They always change it. They're obviously going to change what they do to accommodate number one now.
What? So make your case for Hall of Fame with Cam Newton, because I don't feel like that's the general consensus.
Oh, well, I think Cam could not just say, yeah, you know what? I decided, forget New England. I'm just going to hang it up. He would not go to the Hall of Fame. He needs, but I think he really only needs one or maybe two more good seasons to justify it. Had the greatest rookie season by a QB of all time. I know that sounds hyperbolic, but it is in fact true. Look up his numbers. You might be able to summon one or two alternatives, but it's way up there. And his 2015 season, when we always hear about the oft mythologized guy who makes everyone around him better, isn't that precisely what Cam Newton did with that 2015 team? The defense was good that year that they went to the Super Bowl, but they went 15-1, and he was throwing the ball to Philly Brown and Ted Ginn Jr. I don't know what's much better than that. All the songs sung about Brady and Peyton making everybody around them better. Cam Newton did that better than either one of those guys has done it. Well, certainly better than Peyton ever did it. Peyton, of course, had Hall of Fame pass catchers throughout his career. I mean, dips a little bit once he gets to Denver, but nevertheless, that year that Cam had, and the thing that will get him into the Hall ultimately are the rushing numbers. He's the all-time greatest running quarterback in football history, in pro football history, I should say, right? Don't you agree? I mean, his touchdown totals on the ground and runner.
I mean, I don't know. You got to factor in Michael Vick there. I mean, if you saw, I don't know, if you put a highlight reel together, both those two, I don't know who you'd, you know, if you could put together your best 3 minutes of Cam and your best 3 minutes of Vick, I don't know. I think Vic may win that highlight reel.
I don't want to get in trouble comparing athletes to automobiles, but Ace, isn't Mike Vick basically the Jaguar of days gone by? Really great performing automobile as long as it's fine-tuned, but it falls apart too often. Mike Vick, the weird paradox of Michael Vick and RG3 too is for the bet being the best athletes on the field, Mike Vick would run away from, you know, world-class sprinters out on the football field and dodge them and everything, but he had no sense for how to get down just before he got blown up. Like, he would take too many shots, whereas you've never seen Russell Wilson get blown up. Kaepernick never got smacked. Like, you never saw him really take a big lick. Cam Newton was, relatively speaking, pretty durable for the first 8 years of his career, given how many smacks he kept taking.
I agree. I'm feeling like for Cam to get into the Hall of Fame, I feel like we're going to need a Super Bowl with New England. I'm not thinking just about a good season or 10-6 season. I'm talking about a Super Bowl. Sorry, Gary's looking at a stat. NFL stat website has a list of Hall of Fame.
They basically have something what they call the QB Hall of Fame monitor, and they have a score for each QB, you know, throughout history, and it factors in all the different aspects of their career. And they say that the average Hall of Fame monitor score for a Hall of Fame quarterback is 100 or 102. And currently Cam Newton sits at 65.23.
You watch. We'll see who's right. Get back to me in about a decade from now, and you can congratulate me at that point.
But just quickly, can I do other things in between in that time, or does it just kind of have to hang tight?
I like that. I also like that. Next stop, Canton. You know, like, I'll probably do some things in the interim, right? He's not just going to go to Canton tomorrow and wait 5 years there. Like, where is everybody?
It's already a home game, so he's probably going to end up at his house first.
Probably, you know, then maybe some vacations because he's got some money. Right?
If it's an away game, he may meet a new lady friend in the lobby of the hotel, and that may be his next stop.
You don't know.
Like, we don't know.
So presumptuous about how these future Hall of Famers are going to spend the 5 years in between retirement and Canton. It's very strange.
I think we got to get Cam in just to see what he would be wearing for the induction.
That's right. Yeah.
Ceremony. And I don't think a couple of decent seasons with New England and then retirement's going to get him into the Hall of Fame. I think he needs that Super Bowl. He needs that Super Bowl win because also he was at the Super Bowl. He underperformed. There was a little bit of it seemed like he kind of quit on the team or something like that. Yeah, stigma right there. So a Super Bowl win would really
that would guarantee it. That much I agree.
Well,
the Super Bowl.
It would guarantee definitely that when you were arguing with Hench and Simmons, you had some ammunition.
Per this stat that I was talking about, there are only two quarterbacks that rank above the marker for Hall of Fame that do not have at least one championship.
There's right only two. Sorry.
Interesting.
Say it again.
Who are in the Hall and never won the Super Bowl?
I can't say for sure if they're in, but they are above what this metric claims is the average.
Well, I know. I mean, Marino and Fouts.
Marino and Fouts.
Marino and Tarkenton is actually.
Sir Francis of Tarkenton?
Oh, and Jim Kelly? Yeah, there are plenty of guys that never won a Super Bowl.
All right, let me hit Bet Online. You guys, sports, it's coming back. It's slowly, but it's coming back. UFC, NASCAR, boxing, soccer. Bet Online. Best odds and lines for the upcoming games. So while you want to get in on the action, you do it at Bet Online. Need more? Bet Online has simulated NFL, NBA, UFC daily. Also, live casino games, poker tournaments, and the best props in the business. Visit betonline.ag. Use a promo code or use your mobile device and then hit the promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. So you get your phone. You go online, you get to betonline.ag, you hit podcast1 on promo code, and you get your bonus there. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner, podcast1. And don't forget, promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Comeback player of the year at BetOnline, Cam Newton +300, only person better, Ben Roethlisberger +200.
Big Ben.
Well, who are you taking there, Ace? Go ahead and answer that one. Seven or one?
I think Big Ben on the sideline is going to use that tablet to go to YouPorn, get distracted, become tumescent, lose his focus. And so I say Cam Newton.
We all have our demons, Adam. All right, we'll be back with more hot sports talk for you on the Friday Adam Carolla Show. Until then, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damaschek, good sports out. Good sports.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Pick up Adam's book. It's in stock now. Just click the links at adamcarolla.com.